All right. We're back. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. It's been a week since the Deputy Mayor for Education, Jason Cloth, acting for the Mayor of Indianapolis, Greg Ballard, said that he was going to revoke, that is the mayor, the charter of the of a mayor's charter school, the Indianapolis Project School, which is an affiliate of another project school down in Bloomington, Indiana. He was going to revoke it partly for academic reasons, partly for financial reasons. When the I-STEP scores came out, as our listeners know, we were deeply disturbed that the project school, in terms of how African Americans performed on I-STEP, English Language Arts and Math, was at the bottom of the list of Indianapolis school districts and charter schools, and near the bottom of the list, eighth worst of any individual school in Indianapolis and Marion County. They didn't set the world on fire with iRead as well. But in the House for the first time are folks from the Project School with their side of the story. We've got Charisse Ezell, mom. Always good to have moms up in here. We've got Bawana Clements, a counselor at the school, and also a dad. So I got a mom and I got a dad. And from the school, Courtney Flessler and Daniel Barron. And Daniel Barron is the president of the board of this public charter school, the Indianapolis Project School. Guys, welcome.
Thank you so much.
It's good to be here.
Let me first ask, so our listeners understand, what is the Indianapolis Project School?
It's a K-8 public charter school,
mm-hmm.
Serving students in Marion County. Virtually all of our kids come within 5 miles of the building,
mm-hmm.
and we're in just finishing our fourth year as a school.
What's the mission of the school? In other words, when this school was set up,
yes.
What was it designed to do? I mean, different charter schools do different things. Some want to be very, very rigorous. You know, we've got an artsy, craftsy charter school with Heron Charter School. We've got Crystal House Academy, a charter school with somebody's name that actually is living, so it has to keep, you know, a certain image. We've got charter schools for trouble, you know, dropouts, drop out of high school and try to reclaim them. What's your mission?
It's to eliminate the predictive value of race, class, and special abilities on success in school and in life.
Mm-hmm.
That's our vision, is to eliminate that predictive value. And the reason we talk about that predictive value is because when the government determines, the state government determines how many jail cells they need to build in the future.
Mm-hmm.
If they're looking at 2020, they look at third grade test scores.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a tremendous prediction value of achievement tests. So we are founded on the notion that we must eliminate that value. We must have our kids close that achievement gap. And we opened our doors for historically disenfranchised and marginalized parents and their children. So the children that that enrolled in our school are precisely mm-hmm. the children that the school was designed for. Our children come from histories of failure at school,
right.
multiple schools, and we have only turned away one child. One child in our 4 years has been asked to leave the school.
I want to deal with the academics, but I don't want to deal with them first, because I think we're going to be talking more about the academics in the hour than we are the financial. Let me get to the financial piece. The mayor's folks have painted a picture that there was a payroll in July where that caused your operating account to be overdrawn. The businessman in me, the manager in me, hearing that, you know, I've had mentors over the years in 38 years in business to train me. That's something you don't do. You don't bounce payroll and you don't overdraw payroll. What's your side of that?
Clear and simple. We have never missed a payroll. We have never bounced a check. We made the last payroll,
mm-hmm.
and we'd make the next payroll. There is no factual information that would support that claim.
So even if you made payroll, because you know these checking accounts now, you can overdraw as long as you can run to the bank and throw some money in there. So your checking account did not go into a negative balance in order to make payroll.
No, overdraft.
There's the word.
As far as I know, I've never heard of a single check being overdrawn at the bank.
Okay. they had some concerns about your State Board of Account audit.
Yes.
That was through July of 2010, and it was issued in the middle of last year. I kind of scanned that audit mm-hmm. this morning, mm-hmm. and it showed some concerns of how you all handled federal funds, how you handled the president's money. It said that there was some corrective action that was going to be taken in 2011. The city seems to think that corrective action was not taken.
That's totally inaccurate. Mm-hmm. The corrective action was taken immediately. It was a minor claim, mm-hmm. And one that the State Board of Accounts has seen in many, many schools. What happened was is that the money stayed. There was two findings. Mm-hmm. The money stayed in an account over 30 days. It was then spent, and the other finding was that money was inappropriately used for management costs, right. And there was an open question about a professional development position, mm-hmm. whether it could come out of the school implementation dollars. Right. When the request for the answer from the Department of Education did not come forth, mm-hmm. So we did what we believed was accurate. As soon as we were told, it was immediately rectified.
I understand that there has been an audit completed. This is for what period? The current audit that has just been...
Well, it's for our underwriting of our current debt. It was completed at the end of June.
Of this year?
Of this year,
okay.
Yes.
And that is being submitted to the Mayor's Charter School Office?
Yes. The audit was done...
By your auditors?
Yeah. But yes, and our finance lending institutions was uh-huh. done to
a
make...
Third party.
A third-party audit.
Okay.
And it was done to make...
At the request of your lenders?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not sure who requested it.
It was a combination of our lenders and our school. We
sure.
wanted to make sure we were on top of things. Mm-hmm. And one of our most recent meetings with the mayor's office found out that they were requiring that of everyone.
Okay.
And we said, well, we've already started that. So, you know, right on.
I think it's significant because of, in terms of restructuring debt, the bank wanted to make absolutely certain that we met all the requirements and debt ratios of the underwriting process. And we got approved with no question.
I'm going to have listeners maybe listening saying, wait a minute, why does any school, whether it's IPS or the Indianapolis Project School, need to, you know, be in debt in terms of that you got to satisfy, you know, some bank somewhere?
Sure. No, that's a great
that's
question.
That's a great question.
And we're in a privileged position of owning our own building,
mm-hmm.
a substantial building on 22nd and Yandy's, a building that was in a terrible state of disrepair with a great history. It was the National Electric Car Company's
okay.
building. And they won the Indy 500 in 1912.
Yeah. The second Indy 500, the car came from
right.
my building.
So this debt is a mortgage mm-hmm. on the building.
Exactly.
Well, that ain't a debt. That's a mortgage.
That's
exactly.
right.
So did you have to refinance the mortgage?
Right. So as we have gotten stronger mm-hmm. and paid our bills and done what we were supposed to do, mm-hmm. it's time to remortgage. That's what people do. So that was why we called for the audit.
Otis, there's another piece to this that I think is really – Amos, I'm sorry.
Okay.
That's really important. That when the mayor suggested that we ended the year $90,000 in arrears,
mm-hmm.
they had counted a depreciation on that building of over $200,000
as debt
in a cash basis. So when you remove that depreciation,
I got a D in economics in college, but even I know you don't count depreciation as debt.
You can't do that. So we had over $100,000 cash over expenses in the last school ending on June 30th of 2012. This is the whole point, sir,
mm-hmm.
that the act happened immediately
mm-hmm.
with absolutely no forewarning. And they acted, the mayor's office acted on absolutely inaccurate information. And there was absolutely no opportunity by anyone in the school or on the board to respond to the charges prior to them issuing their intention to revoke. That's the issue. It's a due process issue. They've never heard these arguments.
The audit that has been completed, will that audit be made public?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
after you've sent it to the mayor, or can, is there a reason why it can't be made? Since you're getting ready to send it to him anyway, reason why it can't be made public now?
It's in draft form. You know, they're finishing it up. So,
okay.
But in draft form, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. It's got to be. You can't do draft. I know you can't do on draft form. So when the auditors give you the sign of approval, and they put the little stamp and the little fancy seal on it, then that would be made available to
the
public.
And we have a letter of their findings from the auditors as well as from the bank who reviewed the audit. And it showed flying colors.
Let me go to governance. That's been one of the themes on this program. We're so happy now that the state requires all charter schools to post, you know, the members of their governing board. Sure. And correct me if I'm wrong, you're the president of the governing board, correct? Right. But you also run the Project School in Bloomington. Is that correct, or is that also some misinformation?
Well, I am a co-leader.
Okay.
I'm an executive director of the School Project Foundation. 80% of my time goes to our foundation work.
Okay.
So Kathy Deersing is the school leader.
In Bloomington,
okay. Yes. But I think it's critical to note around our governance that our governance structure was proposed in our charter.
Mm-hmm.
We have not changed the governance structure at all from what was approved by the mayor's office, and it was approved both by a Democratic and a Republican administration because we were right in that transition.
So this charter was one of the last granted by former Mayor Peterson, correct?
The last.
Okay. This was the last one.
That's right.
And he approved this and then got thrown out of office.
That's right. So then it was reviewed again by the new administration, and it was approved again with the governance structure that's currently in place.
And that included – you wanted your board to include teachers?
Yes. It's in our bylaws. Yes.
And include parents?
Yes, it's in the bylaws.
Are you all – then I got to raise this question. Are you all the only public charter school in this city where teachers and parents are a member of the governing board as part of your rules of the game?
I can't answer that question for other schools, but I can say we're a minority.
Mm-hmm.
The board is predominantly non-affiliated or employed by the school. But, yes, it's in our charter. I can't speak for other governance structures.
And I think there are some charter schools where parents are represented. I don't know of any where teachers – and some may be thinking, wait a minute, isn't that a conflict of interest if you've got the teachers as part of the board? How does that help you? If teachers are a part of the governing board, the governing structure?
The school charter was put together by a group of 12 people who worked tirelessly for over 2 years to create what we believe to be an extraordinary response to the current reform efforts being made across the country.
Mm-hmm.
The importance of the board to support the visionary work and the work that is founded on social justice and equitable outcomes – but it was absolutely critical that the board have the voice of teachers who are doing the work daily with the school. But of course, there's two teachers. It's really one classroom teacher who's actually a school on the leadership team, and our technology director. Obviously they're recused from any conversation or action that has anything to do with themselves. I mean, there's a very clear conflict of interest clause in both the bylaws and our ethical agreement.
239-1310, 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. Let me move to academics. And I went to your website maybe about 40 minutes before I was to come on the air, and I discovered there was a bunch of documents that you posted to the website, including the response to the mayor's charter school office. And for the benefit of the student there, you know, sometimes, yes, us adults do have to skim when you read. I mean, you don't read the whole thing, but you're trying to skim to find the highlights. And I noticed in your response, it's kind of in two parts, you all were extraordinarily blunt and strong in a positive way in defending the financial charges levied against you.
Yes.
But when I started reading about the responses to the academic concerns, I saw a different tone. It's the first time I really have heard this tone from the Project School. And in your response to concerns 6 through 11 of the mayor dealt with academics. And in your response to the first concern of academics, you all write in your response, quote, "When determining this goal," this was your goal that every student will read, write, and compute at or above grade level within the first 3 years of the school. You all write, quote, "When determining this this goal, we had an incomplete understanding of the level of challenge a majority of our students would face. We absolutely have enrolled the exact students we beckon through our mission, vision, and core beliefs. We are committed to serving students with the highest needs and the greatest challenges. That said, we believe that the time needed to counteract previous experiences of our students is longer than initially thought. And then when I skim down your responses to the academics, you all, and correct me if I'm misinterpreting this incorrectly. You're saying, yeah, we know we're not meeting the academic standards that the community would like to see us reach. We need more time. We didn't know this was as rough as we found it. Am I interpreting that right?
Yes, you are. And I'd like to introduce Brianna Clement, who's our guidance counselor at the school, who has the personal daily interaction with our student body.
Yeah, I want everybody to hear
Thank you.
Am I reading that right? Because I also found on the website that the state sent a consultant to y'all, probably at your expense, or was taxpayers' expense. And as I was skimming that, I'm seeing things like longer school day coming. A greater emphasis on the basics combined with the other things you do academically. Did I read that correctly? Because they're like, my eyes are getting not as good as they used to be.
You did. And, you know, what we want to make clear is that this is not an excuse-making mm-hmm. agenda. The young people that we serve come from all sorts of places, all sorts of circumstances. And what we're trying to put out is that the scores alone don't tell the full story of the students that we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. We have young people who started the year off having full-blown panic attacks in the middle of the hallway and unable to be coached to take another step and would leave the building. These students are now being at school all day.
How does a student have a panic attack in a building?
I'm talking nausea. I'm talking crying. I'm talking laying on the floor and having to be picked up.
Based upon what?
Previous experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the assumptions can be made there. But mm-hmm. when you look at students that have been to 5, 6, 7 schools prior to starting at our school, you can assume that something hasn't gone right.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's been at home and so that's forced many moves, or it's been at school. You can make assumptions like that. And so we work on those assumptions, and then we meet the kid where he's at, mm-hmm. and we say, we want you here.
Absolutely.
We want you here. We are not going to send you away. We look at the parent, and we say, we are not sending you away. We will work with you. And it takes a little bit of time.
One of the things I noticed that You've got a thing out that says that 79% of your kids mm-hmm. have only come to you in the last couple of years.
Right.
And out of 300 kids, that's 200 and something. You know, you only got an enrollment of 300. That's a heck of a churn. Is there a lot of churn in this school? I would call it churn. The educators may have another term for that.
Retention.
Right.
Yeah, retention. I call it, cable industry, I call it churn.
You know, interestingly, the mayor's office reported to us back in January that our retention rate was one of the highest in the cities of the charter schools. And we were actually surprised because mm-hmm. we were disappointed at the students that we haven't been able to keep for whatever reason.
75%. We have a 75% retention rate, which is at the upper level, the upper quartile of schools. But it's critical to understand that 57% of our middle school students have been to 4 or more schools. 45% have been to 5 or more schools.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been tremendous mobility and transiency before they come. Once we get them and keep them, they achieve it at really high levels. And I think it's really critical to understand the difference between having a child just for a year or two with a history of failure at school,
mm-hmm.
with a history of potential abuse at home, and then helping to heal that child and to transform their attitudes, not only about themselves, but their ability to be successful at school and in life. And that's what our work is about, sir.
Walk me through this split day and the way it was positioned to me, and then when I skimmed the proposed academic plan for this current school year, you kind of spend part of the day doing basics and then part of the day on these project things. Mm-hmm. And obviously the other side was trying to explain this, and I'm trying to understand it. I've got the school people here. What is it? Break this down for the community.
Our day is a common day at our school starts with a morning meeting. We bring everybody together in the classroom. We greet them. There's a philosophy behind allowing kids in the school to have an opportunity for somebody to say hello to them no matter what. So we set up a situation for that to happen.
Okay.
Then we move into our math workshop time. We've added on extra minutes in math. We had big plans this year on doing professional development around math, continuing to improve that. We have found that several of our kids that are coming from, you know, other schools, they're suffering in number sense, just sheer number sense, and what it actually means to be adding 18 plus 12, you know, let alone just understanding the algorithm to do so. We move into our reading and writing workshop time, where they are taught a lesson, and then they go and they work on what they were taught. We have kids reading novels, writing essays. With our older kids, we have to work especially hard at stamina, being able to understand you can sit and read a book for 20 minutes, and that's a skill that you're going to need for life. And we do different kinds of assessment during that time, and the assessment, again, meets them where they're at, and we move them forward from there. Sometimes it's 3, 4, or 5 grade levels behind. Our project time of the day is kind of tying that all together. What are the skills that we're learning in reading, writing, and math, and how can we tie that to work within the community? Mm-hmm. We ask a question of the year. Last year, our question was, what makes a healthy community? And we moved forward with that. We had kids brainstorming what healthy is. We had kids brainstorming what community is. And then they did projects and solved problems to make healthy communities. And you know, I'm happy to describe some of those. The ultimate goal is to tie all of that into the standards so that, you know, they're learning how these, when you're solving problems in your community, you are using your reading, writing, and math skills.
239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon's name is, let me bring a mom into the discussion. Jerice Ezel, you know, how many kids you got in the school? How long they been there?
Hi, Amos. I have one son that's at the project school. He's been there since day one when the doors opened.
That 4 years ago. So he's a veteran.
He is a veteran.
All right. How was he doing when he got there? How's he doing now?
Well, when he got there, my son basically tore up the school.
Mm-hmm.
He had emotional problems.
Mm-hmm.
That was
not one of Bebe's kids.
He was worse than Bebe.
He was worse than Bebe's kids. Okay.
When you talk about the project school and what they do,
mm-hmm.
my son is prime example.
Okay.
When you have a student that, like Wasana was saying, mm-hmm. has a temper tantrum in the middle of the hallway,
mm-hmm.
that was my son.
Mm-hmm.
He has kicked, fought, mm-hmm. almost bit the founder principal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they did not give up.
Mm-hmm.
They contacted an independent study, asked me, is it okay if they test my son
right.
in his environment?
Mm-hmm.
3 days they tested him. We came back together as a group. Discussed the findings. The findings was, I have an autistic son, which was not known to me right. prior to coming to the project school. My son came to the project school in grade one.
Mm-hmm.
So he spent kindergarten in another school district
right.
getting kicked out. I'm receiving the phone calls every day at my job. I am a single parent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for me to keep getting off of work,
yeah.
coming, seeing about my child, and it's like, no one is hearing him until he came to the project school.
239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon's names. We're joined by a student. We're going to talk to him in a little bit, Christian Cunningham. Let me start with the phones. And Tara, hi there.
Hello, yes, I'm here.
You're on the air. What's up?
Well, I am a mother of a child at the project school. He was getting ready to go into the second grade. And he completed kindergarten as well as first grade at the project school. And we're very disappointed that the school is being closed because he and his classmates are thriving at the school. And I just don't feel that the younger kids that haven't been tested yet have been even included in the discussion of how well the project school is serving the students, and you can see when the kids start out in the program how well they do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the school all the time, and I'm in my son's classroom in his K-1 class. I mean, they're good kids. They're thriving. They're learning. Academics is a priority, and I think that just the message is the wrong, you know, attitude about the project schools being put out there. And these test scores for the older kids are defining the whole school. And, I mean, the reason we sent our son to the school is because it's a diverse group of kids that truly represent our neighborhood and our community. And it's just a shame that the mayor's chosen to close it down, especially at this late stage in the game. We don't have a lot of alternatives for our kids.
All right, let me, Daniel Barron, I know you all have been in court. Has there been any movement on your request for a temporary injunction?
No, we're waiting to hear right now. It's before the judge.
All right, it's before the judge.
Yes.
They're downtown now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They're on the prayer rug.
No, we're on the prayer rug.
You're on the prayer rug, the wheel of justice. 239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon's names. We'll take a break. Come back with more of your questions and calls. We'll talk about the achievement gap. And we'll also ask, as I remember in my data and going through the data, on the initial I-read for the third graders at the project school, 40% passed. And during the break, I'm going to find out, I mean, because all of them had to take the retest. I want to know how they did on the retest, because we might be breaking news here and see what happens. It's Afternoons with Amos after these. Welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. Let me go back to the phones and... Rosa. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rosa.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I am concerned that the mayor has not asked the children what they want to do. Go there and find. My grandson was crying the other day because he wants to know why y'all closed the school. And I was just wondering, why haven't they spoke to more parents and to more kids to find out, you know, what's going on? Like I said, my grandson is thriving at that school. He honestly is.
What year is he?
He is in the going into the fourth grade.
Going into the fourth grade. Did he pass the I-read?
Yes, he did real good, yes.
Yay! But
he's getting straight A's.
Mm-hmm, good.
He definitely is getting straight A's. It's because... He went to the project school and everything. I just wanted to know why you guys are not talking to more parents and talking to the teachers and talking to the kids. Because the kids need to be involved in this, too.
All right. Well, she suggested the kids ought to be involved in that. Christian Cunningham is a student at the project school. Christian, welcome. What grade are
you in? Oh, man. I'm a freshman now.
And so you are a graduate.
Yes.
You're an alumnus.
Yes.
Why is this a good school?
This is a good school because, honestly...
Tell your story.
Come on, just...
Christian was a featured speaker at our 2012 graduation this year because he is such a remarkable story of success for us, we think. By our measurements, he is a remarkable success.
What high school you at now?
Oh, man.
You're going to be starting high school in a couple weeks?
Yes.
Where?
At Heron High School.
You're going to be at Heron?
He'll be a sophomore.
Okay. Oh, you're going to be a sophomore at Heron?
A freshman.
You're going to be a freshman at Heron? Okay.
He's
there
in
we
summer
go.
School.
See,
summer
I should listen to this. Right see, now. I see. That's yeah, what I get. Listen to an adult. The adult throws me off. listen to the student.
Right.
What do you think your time at the project school, how did it help you as an individual? How did it help you as a young man?
It helped me a lot academically, behavior-wise, thinking, everything. It changed my whole personality.
Right. Okay. 239-1310. Back to the phones. And Brenda, hi there.
Hi, Amos. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
And how old's your guest?
They're right here.
And how old to Mr. Christian? Congratulations. I'm going to pray for your success at Heron High School. But this is the question to the staff at the project school.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of emotions that are in this conversation, and a lot of these emotions touch at heart to my own experience in dealing with the educational system here and how my hearing-impaired son was maltreated in the educational system. So I can hear the compassion that you have regarding the children that attend your school. But this is my question to you. Knowing that these children were not getting educated in the previous schools that they were in, why did you not file a complaint with the U.S. Department of Education and also the Department of Justice? When it's a case where the rights of children with special needs are being violated, and many of the things that you talked about, hearing Christian and the mother that talked, a lot of these children are beat down by the educational system. They're treated as if they're not human. Oftentimes they are called stupid. Many times they're abused in the educational system. And when I hear the mother speak about how her son would throw tantrums, that was a frustration as to how he was being maltreated before he came to you. So that is my question to you. Why did you not file a complaint with the U.S. Department of Education and the Department of Justice, knowing what these children were going through? Because I believe you have good intentions. That's what I believe. But you have been caught in a situation where most of our society do not want to talk about the abuse that children with special needs are going through. You're doing a good job, and I think you're trying to convey that. But I really believe that if you had taken that extra step to put on the record that these young children are coming from previous school systems and they're being denied an opportunity to learn, I think you would have more footage for credibility. Not that I'm saying you're not credible.
Right. No, I appreciate your question.
Well, and Brenda, Charisse Ezell, the mom that's here, was having an amen corner while you were talking. Daniel Barron, does Brenda have a point? In other words, you were picking up students. You guys went into this thinking, hey, we can change the world in 3 years, and you discovered the real world is rougher than you thought. In retrospect, should you have blown a whistle?
We really weren't in position to. Our response was to the immediate needs of kids. We do a move-in conference with every new child that enters a school in a shorter time than is required, so that we can understand the previous programs they've been in, understand what their needs are, and correct any misinformation that's in their IEP. Mm-hmm. So we work collaboratively with parents. We put all of our energy into the family and the child. It's not our place to go legally against previous institutions, although I understand the frustration. I understand the desire for a parent to want to do that when their child's been mistreated at school. But we put all of our energy into doing the right thing, into righting the wrongs and providing the programs that our kids. And we have a very high level of special ed students, and we do, you know, our compliance record is very strong in special ed.
Let me 239-1310, 239-1310, let me go to Frank. Hi, Frank.
How are you?
Fine.
I just wanted to make a comment in respect to the fact that how important the project school actually is, being associated with Vonna Clements throughout his growth years. One of the things that became important to me was to begin to understand the after effect. I'm a pastor in a local community in the area. If things are not done at the level in which the project school is currently working in order to get some of these children turned around, then when they get to me in a church, in a local community, these problems not only persist, but they worsen. And so the issue is, if for no other reason the project school ought to be allowed to exist, is that it cuts down that spectrum on the other end where ultimately now these children become adults with the same problems. Still unable to function, still unable to deal with society, still unable to be productive citizens. So in my vote, if I had a chance to vote, it would be the project school would continue to do what they want to. If you think it takes a long time to get a student turned around, you ought to see what it takes to get a full-grown adult turned around when they're trying to participate in church projects and church activities.
Frank, let me ask a question, because this is a question that obviously impacted the four IPS schools and the school up in Gary that was involved in the state takeover. At what point, if a school is not showing improvement based upon the standard that has been set by law, which is ISTEP, mm-hmm. Right now we already had a law that said you were supposed to intervene after 6 years.
Okay.
And everybody was ignoring the law till the last few years.
Sure.
At what point, if 4 years is insufficient to pull a trigger on a charter school, particularly a charter school. At what point? Is it 6? Is it 10? Is it never?
Well, let me give you a personal perspective. The changing of children is a whole lot easier than trying to change adults. For me, every case has to be taken introspectively and individually, mm-hmm. because everybody that comes in with their own sets of problems. And so the identification of those problems is one thing, but now to get the person to participate in what we would say would be prescribed change, which Project Schools calls IEPs, you've got to develop it for each person. And the one thing that you don't add into this is how long does it take a person to get to the place where, number one, they're ready to make the change, but number two, ready to participate in making that change. And for each case, it's always individually. It took me a long time to learn that. There is no perspective or prescription that's out there that fits everybody. It has to be one of those things that ultimately each case takes an individual, and the Project School is right. It takes a whole lot longer than you put in that first grant request.
But you didn't. You gave me a great answer, but you didn't specifically answer the question. What is the length? Because I have seen schools make great progress with African Americans over a 2 to 3 year period. I have seen it. We've talked about it on this program. And so at what point do you pull a trigger?
My key is to go back and look at what they did to make the change, see if that's been duplicatable in different scenarios around the areas, and then make that the prescription for everybody. But to put a date or a time or a year on that, I think it would be a disservice to those who are being served.
Courtney Flessner, I appreciate Frank. Courtney, I'm going to use Kip as an example.
Great.
Of a school that when they started out, they were the pits in terms of African-American performance. Mm-hmm. There was some leadership changes there, and I don't know what else they did, secret sauce or whatever, and African-American kids are doing better. Are they up there with the suburban schools, Tinley, on Speedway? Not yet, but they're getting there. Mm-hmm. I can see the progress, and I can laud that progress.
Sure.
How then do we get the Project School from there, ahead of Imagine? Mm-hmm. So, 'cause I'd rather be talking about Imagine, because they ain't doing it either. And get you all up to where Kip is, where Tinley is, mm-hmm. where Speedway is, where Hamilton Southeastern is. How do we do that?
Hey, Amos, I think what the biggest problem is that there is an enormous part of the story that can't be quantified. Or it could be quantified in a really bizarre way.
But are you saying that a kid that came from a dysfunctional other school mm-hmm. is incapable after 2 or 3 or 4 years of hitting the mark?
I don't feel that way at all. I think that there's a story out there that has not yet been told about the culture of schools in Indianapolis and the amount of movement that's going on between schools and the reason why that movement is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found at our school is that it wasn't necessarily a last resort, but it became kind of the last place a lot of kids went because they realized we were willing to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I I'm not going to sit and debate the scores that the IDOE, puts out. Sure, we've got some other stuff to add to that disaggregates it a little bit and just adds to the story a little bit. But the stories of the kids, I'm thinking of a kid who came to us this year as an eighth grader who had been to 12 schools prior to coming to us, who had been retained 3 times, who wouldn't take his hood off his head and slept through class, who 6 months into that experience had his hood off, 7 months into that experience wasn't wearing a sweatshirt anymore.
No jacket.
And was paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an eighth grader. So if he spent all of those previous years in that same position with the phone calls that Charisse was talking about every day, come get him.
Mm-hmm.
The amount that has to be built up for him is positively enormous. And I'm not going to point fingers and I'm not going to talk about other schools because that would be completely inappropriate. But I will say we wouldn't let him go.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't let him leave.
In fact, when the head of school and I sat during Christmas break, came in when the school lights were out,
mm-hmm.
and had meetings with over 20 families We had parents walk into the meetings crying, one reporting being nauseous and not having slept the night before because she thought that this was the day we told her, you need to put your kids somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
In 4 years, Project School has only asked one child not to return. Everyone else we've asked and pleaded with their families to keep them there
mm-hmm.
and told them, we're in this as long as you're in this. And in fact, most of the time, or some of the time, we've been in it longer than they've been in it. And their kids are still with us and doing well.
Let me ask you, you had a high suspension rate in last school year, 2010-2011, according to the state reports, 69 students suspended. I can't tell whether that was the same student suspended 69 times.
likely not.
Charisse thought it was her kid. Or whether that was 69 individuals. How, if I was looking at this report for 2011-2012, what would that number be? Ballpark.
So the 69, there are a few individuals who have more than one suspension. That's mm-hmm. not 69 different children mm-hmm. being suspended.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we go a step further than suspensions. We tell parents, we do morning check-ins for some of our toughest kids. Mm-hmm. And a morning check-in is a visual check-in.
Mm-hmm.
Is this kid awake? Mm-hmm. Are they dressed? Are they clean? Have they eaten?
Mm-hmm.
If you take meds, have you taken your meds?
Mm-hmm.
We do a morning check-in with them before they even step foot in the door of a classroom
mm-hmm.
so that we're not setting them up for failure.
Okay.
Our whole staff is on board with that. And if a kid slips by us, our teachers are doing morning check-ins, and they're making sure that kids who are not prepared to learn, that we're giving them the assistance they need prior to being in the class and getting put out.
Let me go back to the phones. And Mary Ann, hi there.
Hi, Amos.
Yeah, hi.
This is Mary Ann Ruger. I'm a parent at the Project School, and I actually had understood you were going to be talking a little bit about iRead at the school, and I was prepared to speak in response to that. It appears that you have not reached that yet.
Oh, we reached that. You must not have been listening.
I was on the wrong computer. Then I can go ahead and speak.
Well, what I basically asked was, on the retest, how well did Project School kids do? Because I knew 40% passed the first time, and I think Courtney was saying it had gotten up to 60%.
Yeah, I was thinking about it a little bit more. I'm sorry to interrupt you,
okay, Amos. Yeah.
It's important to note that we were told to cease operations. Mm-hmm. So there are 8 of our students that, if they had the opportunity to take the test, couldn't have the opportunity because we were told to cease operations. But we did get up to
60%.
So
there's 8 in limbo.
There's 8 in limbo, yep.
Well, they could open up the computer and let y'all do that. They could. Jason Clothier, he used to be a teacher. He could come up there and implement that. Mary Ann, what'd you want to add?
Yes, what I'd like to add to that is my daughter is one of those students who did not pass iRead on the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to flesh that out a little bit for you. I am one of the many, many parents who may live within the edges of IPS or may live in the surrounding counties who bring our children into the school. Number one, because we think it's a wonderful place, and number two, because many of us do have children with special needs that we feel that the school meets their special needs in a very, very good way. My daughter has ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
She is a child of color. She's Hispanic. Mm-hmm. 2 days before that test, she had a severe reaction to the medication she was taking, and she had to totally go off of her medication for a day, go on to a totally different medication the day before the test. When she came home the day of the test, she literally fell asleep in the car on the way home and later told me she had slept maybe 2 hours the night before. In light of that, she missed passing it by one question, and only one question. In kindergarten in the Orchard School, which is a very good private progressive school that our family has used for our older child through eighth grade, she struggled to read there
mm-hmm.
with very, very good teachers that we knew well. We brought her to the Project School by our choice, not by Orchard's choice, by our choice in first grade. They nurtured her. They worked with her steadily.
Right.
They loved her. She's on grade level. She passed the retake with no problem whatsoever, and she reads every day. She
mm-hmm.
loves to read. She loves to go to school. And in all honesty, having an ADHD child in your home who does not know where they're going to school in 2 weeks
right.
is extremely difficult.
All right, good point. 239-232-232. I can't talk today. 239-1310. Let me go to Daria on the line. Hi, Daria.
Hey, good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm good. I just have, I guess, a question about, I know you guys are saying how you you have a lot of success stories, but I'm concerned about the other 70-odd% of the students that are not meeting the requirements as far as grade level. I want to know what you guys are doing to meet those students' needs, because I think that had students that went to the private school, but they took their children out because they were concerned about something called passions. And they said about almost an hour their day, pretty much, I guess, at clubs where they watch movies or they speak.
Hold on, Daria, because your phone is kind of breaking up a little bit.
Can you hear me?
Hear you a little bit better now.
Okay. So, well, I don't know if you heard the first part of my question, but it was how do you remedy the issues that these students have that come to you? Because I've had friends that had their children there, and their students struggle. They struggled at their schools before, and they come to the private school thinking that they're going to get something different, but it's really not different because they have something called passion, and they spend an hour a day knitting or watching movies or something like that when they could be spending that time, you know, remediating these students.
I got it. All right.
So I just want to see if they could address.
All right. That. Courtney or Daniel, you want to address that?
I would love to address that.
Okay.
So passions is a part of our day that happens 3 days a week. For 40 minutes a day. Where young people are engaged in an activity of their choosing so that they will feel like they have a say in what they're learning and participating in. This brings out the students' enthusiasm and motivates them to learn. It's much like being involved in an athletic program if you are an athlete, and sometimes you know, you take an athletic program away from a child and he totally tanks in school because that's what keeps him going. That's the fuel that it takes for him to sit in math class and pass. So, you know, passions is definitely a part of the Project School Day and one that we're proud of. My young person, Kai, is a six-year-old going to be in the first grade, and he's extremely artistic. And loves to express himself, drawing, acting, singing, that sort of deal. And passions was for him what he looked for. He woke up talking about passions. He had a construction class where he worked with Mr. Mike building, and every week he would bring home this elaborate wooden sculpture that he had built. And I would be able to use that and the conversation with Kai to encourage him in his reading. He's a very active boy. He doesn't necessarily like to sit and read,
right.
But obviously that's an important part of his education.
Let me go, before I go to Carol, I really want to hit this a minute. It's one of the things that disturbs me is this huge achievement gap at this school. White students in the composite for I-STEP, 81.8% passing English language arts, 73.9% passing math. African Americans, 32.6% passing English language arts, 25% passing math. If you factor out those students that have been at the school for a while, I would submit that the achievement gap then will become outrageously insurmountable. How do we, particularly a school founded on the foundation of trying to reduce the achievement gap. How do you do that when the gap is the difference between the New York Yankees and a high school, no, an elementary school baseball team?
I think you've nailed the issue, Amos. The kids who have been with us a while clearly score higher. The kids that are coming in from other schools clearly are at the often at the bottom of the academic achievement ladder. The longer those kids stay, the purpose of the school, we cannot work magic. We can't close the achievement gap when we have kids entering at a high level from one socioeconomic status and kids entering an extremely low level at another from another socioeconomic demographic. But what we can do is narrow that gap over time, and that's exactly what we're demonstrating. The state of Indiana, along with the whole country's statistical picture, is that the longer kids of color stay in school, the further and further they fall behind mm-hmm. their more privileged peers.
Let me, in the 30 seconds I got left, first of all, thank you all for being here. Two very, very quick questions on when people see the coverage in the paper and on television, they're seeing parents that are predominantly white, the school is predominantly black. Will we be seeing more African American parents out there? You know, you got a demonstration, I believe, tomorrow out at
Douglas Park.
At Douglas Park. What time?
5 o'clock.
At 5 o'clock. Am I going to see some color out there?
Oh yeah, you're going to see color, Amos. I mean, I am a parent. I live in Brightwood, Martindale area. But like I say, half of us are single parents. We can't afford to take off and show our pretty faces.
I understand.
But kids is there.
And then one final thing. Earlier we had Pastor Bruce Farr, Pastor Fred Dorsey of the Martindale-Brightwood Neighborhood Association. I asked them, had they heard from you all at the Project School, you know, in this crisis? They had not. Have you not reached out to the Neighborhood Association of Martindale-Brightwood?
Oh, yes, we have. I spoke with Reverend Day just last night.
Okay. Well, you might also want to check with Pastor Farr.
He's on my list.
Yeah, get everybody together. Again, Daniel Barron, the board president of the Indianapolis Project School, Courtney Flessner, also with the school, Sharice Azell, parent, Christian Cunningham, alumnus of the school, now down at Heron, Juana Clements, counselor and parent, Daniel Barron, board president. Guys, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.